is Friday, June 5th, and welcome to Create 24. I'm your host, Alana Hill. Top officials of the National Election Commission have resigned over ballot shortages at some Seoul polling stations during Wednesday's local elections. We'll have more on that in News Briefing. On In Depth, we discuss a new UN-backed climate report warning that global temperatures are likely to remain at or near record highs over the next 5 years. And on Movie Spotlight, we review the new Korean comedy Wild Thing and the Hollywood horror hit Backrooms. Let's start Korea 24 right now. The head of the embattled National Election Commission has resigned to take responsibility for ballot shortages in several polling stations in Seoul during Wednesday's local elections. To give us the latest on the unprecedented scandal, as well as some of our other headlines of the day, we have now with us in the studio our KBS World News editor, Koo Hee-jin. Hello, Hee-jin.
Hello, Alana.
So it's been 2 days since the local elections, with the announcement for some of the winners, including Seoul Mayor Oh Se-hoon, suspended as a ripple effect of this ballot shortage. What can you tell us about the NEC chief's resignation, which was also the direct result?
Well, the chief of the election watchdog, Noteak, has stepped down to take responsibility for the unprecedented ballot shortage in some polling stations in Seoul during a news conference held by the commission's headquarters in Gwacheon, Gyeonggi Province, Friday. No said there is no excuse for the incident, which violated the people's precious right to vote. No added that the election watchdog will set up a committee comprising outside figures tasked with determining the cause of the ballot shortages and devising ways to prevent similar occurrences. Also on Friday, NEC Secretary General Ha Chul-hun resigned over the ballot shortages.
Well, sticking with this incident, demonstrators have been gathering at the Jamsil polling station in Seoul's Songpa district to protest the shortages. Police broke through the crowd, blocking access to the station on Friday morning. Hee-jin, what can you tell us about the end of this 35-hour standoff?
Well, around 1,000 police officers were dispatched to a polling station in Jamsil area of Songpa district at 7:30 a.m. Friday to disperse hundreds of protesters who had staged a sit-in and blocked access to the building. The crowd first gathered there on Wednesday night, angry about a shortage of ballots during those elections and determined to prevent election officials from removing two ballot boxes that were inside. After some minor scuffles and even the physical removal of some demonstrators, police officers finally managed to break through and secure the boxes containing ballots from approximately 2,000 voters, thereby formally completing the affected races. With all votes counted, Seoul Mayor Oh Se-hoon of the main opposition People Power Party obtained 49.22% of votes, while his opponent Jeong Won-ho of the ruling Democratic Party secured 48.07%. No one was injured or taken into custody in the process, but some citizens continued to protest outside the Olympic Park handball gymnasium, where the ballot boxes were taken for counting, shouting threats against the NEC officials and accusing them of election fraud. Meanwhile, the police have launched an investigation into NEC chief Noteak and other officials after complaints were filed against them, alleging dereliction of duty and other offences.
We'll turn now to some of our other headlines of the day. President Lee Jae-myung will visit Belgium, Italy, the Vatican and France starting next week to take part in the Group of Seven summit. Hee-jin, can you elaborate on his itinerary?
Well, National Security Advisor Wee Sung-nak told reporters at a briefing on Friday that he will depart for Belgium on Tuesday for summit meetings with Belgian and EU leaders. He will then travel to Italy for a state visit June 12th to 13th, meeting with Italian President Sergio Mattarella and Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, and pay a visit to Pope Leo XIV during a trip to the Vatican from June 14th to 15th. 17th. The South Korean president's attendance at the G7 summit in Evian, France, set for June 16th to 17th, comes at the group's invitation.
Chinese President Xi Jinping will take a trip of his own next week to North Korea. We previously discussed speculation surrounding this trip, but Heejin, what do we know now for certain?
Well, both China and North Korea officially announced that Xi will make a state visit to the North from Monday to Tuesday at the invitation of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Following the announcement, South Korea's foreign ministry expressed hope that China will play a constructive role on issues concerning the Korean Peninsula. A ministry official told reporters on Friday that it is keeping a close eye on the situation and that the government hopes that North Korea-China exchanges will contribute to the peace and stability of the Korean Peninsula. The Chinese leader had previously visited Pyongyang in June 2019 for a state visit when he held summit talks with Kim. The most recent meeting between the two leaders took place in Beijing in September when Kim attended a military parade marking the 80th anniversary of China's World War II victory over Japan.
Looking at some of our business headlines now, NVIDIA chief Jensen Huang says he has prepared some surprises for South Korea. Heejin, what did he say?
Well, upon his arrival on Friday, Huang told reporters he had brought a lot of business to the country and that he had, quote-unquote, some surprises, without elaborating further. Let's listen to what he had to say during a Q&A at Gimpo International Airport.
We're doing a lot of very important work, as you know. Artificial intelligence build-out is accelerating. We had a very, very big year last year, and the Korea market is doing very well. I'm very happy about that. The second half is going to be much larger than the first half, and next year is going to be very, very large.
Well, Huang arrived on his private jet on Friday and confirmed that he has a string of meetings lined up with businesses including Hyundai, LG, SK, Samsung and Naver. The NVIDIA chief said South Korea is an excellent place to invest in R&D centers due to its expertise in AI and robotics, and that as the country is a global manufacturing hub, it could help turn NVIDIA tech into physical AI. Huang's trip to Seoul comes about 7 months after his previous visit to South Korea for the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation CEO Summit in Gyeongju.
And some of our listeners might remember that during that visit, Huang made headlines as he joined chiefs of Samsung Electronics and Hyundai Motor for a late-night meal of Korean fried chicken and beer, commonly known as chimek. On Friday evening, he's said to have samgyeopsal, or grilled pork belly, with major business leaders.
Yes, Huang is meeting with SK Group Chairman Choi Tae-won, LG Group Chairman Koo Kwang-mo, Naver Chief Lee Hae-jin at a Korean barbecue joint in the bustling Hongdae district called Hyeongnim Joyo, which roughly translates to "I'm here, older brother." Earlier in the afternoon, his first stop after leaving the airport was a PC-bang, or a gaming cafe, in Seoul's Mapo district, where he met with esports legend Faker. During his visit to the country last year, Huang chanted Faker's name on stage and said that without PC gaming, without PC bangs, without esports, there is no NVIDIA today.
Well, despite the NVIDIA chief's visit, the benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index tumbled more than 5% on Friday on massive profit-taking. Heejin, can you give us the closing figures?
Well, the KOSPI ended the session at 8,160.59, down 478.82 points, or 5.54% from the previous day. The index opened at 8,323.20, down 316.21 points, or 3.66% from the prior close, and extended its losses throughout the day. At one point, it fell to 8,038.1, briefly threatening to break below the 8,000 mark. The steep decline prompted the activation of a sidecar early in the session, temporarily suspending program sell orders. Losses were later trimmed somewhat amid last-minute bargain hunting. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also closed sharply lower, shedding 47.29 points, or 4.5%, to close at 1,002.44.
And finally for today, ruling Democratic Party representative Cho Jung-sik has been elected the new speaker for the second half of the 22nd National Assembly. Hee-jun, can you break down the votes for us?
Well, Cho was elected during a plenary session Friday after securing consent from 267 out of the 276 lawmakers present at the session. In line with the National Assembly Act, which regulates the political neutrality of the National Assembly Speaker, Cho will withdraw from the DP. Cho will serve a two-year term through May 2028. And Cho, as a six-term lawmaker, was elected candidate for speaker, beating out Representatives Kim Tae-nyeon and Park Ji-won during the party's convention on May 13th.
And that wraps up today's news briefing. Thank you so much, Hee-jin, for bringing us all the headlines.
Thank you.
Global average temperatures are likely to continue at or near record levels in the next 5 years, with Arctic temperature anomalies expected to continue to be higher than the global mean, according to a new report from the World Meteorological Organization produced by the UK's Met Office. The report, Global Annual to Decadal Climate Update, lays out scientific estimates for climate change between 2026 and 2035. This year's update promises that global average temperatures are likely to continue at or near record high levels, particularly in the Arctic region. In fact, at least 1 year in the next five is expected to be hotter than 2024, the hottest year on record yet. To get a better understanding of what this report means and its implications here in South Korea, we're joined today on the line by Melissa Seabrook from the UK Met Office. She was one of the authors of the climate update and will be able to give us some insight into what the temperature figures mean for the world and for South Korea. Great to have you with us today, Ms. Seabrook.
Thanks so much for having me here.
Well, let's start with the big picture. The report suggests global temperatures will remain at or near record highs in the coming years. Ms. Seabrook, what should we expect in terms of record-breaking heat over the next 5 years?
Yeah, so there's a very high chance, there's an 86% chance for one in the next 5 years will set a new global temperature record, previously exceeding the current record year, which is 2024, which came in at 1.53 degrees. So expecting that one in the next 5 years will exceed 1.5 degrees. And this is really showing that we are getting closer to this Paris Agreement long-term warming level of 1.5 degrees. Because as we approach this long-term threshold, we will likely see more exceedances of 1.5 degrees. So yeah, we're expecting record-breaking heat in the next couple of years.
86% chance of that record high being broken in the next 5 years. It's certainly an absolutely striking figure. And it raises the question of where these changes will be felt most strongly. Do the report's projections vary by region? And are there particular parts of the world expected to see more pronounced warming or climate impacts?
So for the temperature, we're expected to see above average temperature pretty much everywhere around the world. So in Korea, it's likely that there'll be above average temperature over the next 5 years. And that's pretty universal across the whole world. What is more regionally specific is the precipitation impacts. So the current precipitation impacts for the next 5 years are looking like wetter conditions over the northern hemisphere. And drying across the equator, which is consistent with the climate change precipitation pattern. So for Korea, that means slightly above average precipitation, although we have quite low confidence in this prediction, as historically we have not very good prediction skill over this region. And although not specifically covered in this report, as the climate warms, we expect to see a greater likelihood of extreme events, so kind of heat waves and flooding events as well.
Now, as you just mentioned, Ms. Seabrook, this increasing heat levels are likely to impact the entire globe. But one region the report does single out is the Arctic, where warming is expected to outpace the global average. Can you explain why temperatures are rising faster in the Arctic and why that matters for the wider climate system?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting one. So we're currently predicting that the Arctic will be 3.5 times warmer than the rest of the world. And this is due to a phenomenon known as Arctic amplification. So obviously the Arctic is covered in snow and ice. And this actually reflects a lot of the solar radiation back into space. But as the climate warms, this snow and ice is melting, which means the Arctic is less able to reflect this radiation back into space. It's actually absorbing more radiation, which is causing more sea ice and snow to melt. So you get this kind of positive feedback loop going on, which is causing it to be warming at a much greater rate than the rest of the world. And this has particularly big implications. As you're getting this sea ice melt, you're getting a kind of rise in global sea level as well associated with this. So it's really important. And it has big impacts seen across the rest of the world as well.
Well, after looking at that global picture and the Arctic specifically, let's bring the focus closer to home. What do the report's findings suggest for East Asia? Are there particular trends or risks that countries in this region should be paying attention to over the coming years?
Yeah, so expecting above average temperatures over this region, so more likelihood of extreme heat events, and expecting slightly above average precipitation over this region, although our confidence is quite low. But yeah, as I said, as the climate warms, you're expecting to have more extreme events, so more heat wave and flooding events kind of seen across the world, but particularly in this region.
Well, here in Korea, I mean, we're already seeing hotter days arrive earlier in the year. Based on the report's findings, should people in Korea be expecting summers to only become hotter over the next 5 years? And also, you know, we talk a lot about heat, but are winters also likely to change?
Yeah, so expecting the summers to become hotter, this general increase of temperature. For the winter, we don't specifically cover this in the report, but the kind of trend is that as the climate warms, you're expected for the atmosphere to be able to hold more moisture, so have more kind of periods of long droughts, but more heavy rainfall when the rain does come.
Now, another factor the report highlights is El Niño, which can have a major influence on global temperatures and weather patterns. The report says there is a chance of continuing El Niño conditions in 2027 or 2028. Ms. Seabrook, could you explain what that means and how it could shape global climate conditions in the coming years?
Yep, so El Niño is a naturally occurring warming of the tropical Pacific, which happens kind of every couple of years. And it is a natural cycle, so this does happen throughout the decades. But basically what happens is when you get an El Niño, you get a kind of global rise in temperature due to the extra heat in the Pacific. And we started this year in a La Niña, so a cooling of the Pacific. But we're expecting to end this year in a very strong El Niño, so a very strong warming of the Pacific. And this report highlights that there's indications that this El Niño will persist into 2028. So we're expecting that the next kind of 2 years will be a lot warmer than average. And this has quite big implications for the rest of the world. So as I said already, we're expecting a global warming, but it will also change weather patterns, bringing different regions of more extreme weather and more heat waves and flooding events.
I think that leads to the bigger question of, you know, just how unusual these projections are. From your perspective, do the changes outlined in the report represent a significant departure from past climate trends, or are they broadly in line with what scientists have been expecting? You know, how concerned should people be?
Yeah, so the long-term climate trend is something that is very well known. We're very good at predicting the long-term trend in global temperatures because we understand this very well. We understand that it's being driven by human emissions. Mm-hmm. And these projections are in line with this. So we are just continuing this trend of warming. This particular forecast is predicting to be a bit hotter than usual because of the strong El Nino that's developing. But this will only really add kind of a couple of tenths of a degree to the global temperature. So there's most of the warming really is coming from these human sources. So this is kind of greenhouse gas emissions and aerosols, which we really do need to try and limit as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, after discussing some of the details, let's zoom out now a bit and look at the broader message of the report. For some of our listeners who maybe don't follow climate science closely, what would you say is the single most important takeaway from these findings? And is there a particular message that people here in South Korea should be keeping in mind?
Yeah, so the biggest thing of this report is that the climate is warming. The science is overwhelmingly clear on this fact. And we are expecting the next 5 years to continue at record levels. And we are expecting the temperature records to be broken. And this may mean that the likelihood of extreme heat events is going up. So you really need to be preparing for that. And we really need to be trying to keep the warming as low as possible by reducing emissions as much as possible. And everyone can do their part in that to try and limit emissions.
Well, when it comes to trying to slow the pace of rising temperatures, Ms. Seaberg, what do you think is the single most important thing the world should be doing to try and slow the pace?
Yeah, so as this is a science report, it's not focusing on any policy things, but the science is overwhelmingly clear. The climate is warming and the global average temperature is continuing to rise. And it will continue to do so unless urgent action is taken to try and limit emissions as much as possible.
And Ms. Seabrook, you mentioned that, you know, these things are already happening. These things are in effect and we should be prepared for them. How can we prepare for these rising temperatures?
So this is about kind of knowing the dangers of extreme heat and extreme weather events and checking the forecast as much as possible, protecting yourself in the sun, protecting yourself as much as you can from flooding events, and just really knowing the risks for your area and for the activities that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else in the report that you think deserves more attention or any developments people should be watching more closely over the next 5 years?
Yeah, so globally in the report, we also talk about the fact that we're expecting a wetter than average season over Sahel, over kind of Central Africa, which is particularly interesting as this is a region that usually experiences, historically has experienced quite large droughts. So for it to be wetter than average might have quite big implications for flooding events over this region. And we're also predicting drier than average conditions across the Amazon, which is also a particularly interesting one as the Amazon is a massive carbon source. So the trees in the Amazon take in a lot of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. But obviously, if we're expecting a drier than average season, this could potentially lead to a loss in trees. So this could potentially stop some of the effects of it being a big carbon sink and potentially lead to more emissions as well.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Seaberg, one final question before I let you go. I'm sure some of our listeners might be listening and hearing the statistics from this report and perhaps feeling a bit pessimistic about the state of the climate. As a climate scientist, what is one action that individuals can take?
Yeah, so this is a really good question. I think there's so many things which you can take, and I think it's a really individual thing what you want to do to try and limit your emissions as much as possible. I think it's about making the sacrifices which to you make sense. So for me, I'm a vegetarian, as eating meat is quite a big emitter. But for other people, this might be things like trying to limit driving your car, trying to get public transport to more places, trying to limit flying. It's really a very personal thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really about making the changes which are sustainable to you as an individual.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great note to end our conversation today. My thanks to Melissa Seabrook from the UK Met Office for helping us better understand what the latest climate projections mean for our planet and for the Korean Peninsula. Thank you so much, Ms. Seabrook.
Thanks.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock Market Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index dipped 478.82 points, or 5.54% on Friday, to close at 8,160.59. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also closed sharply lower, shedding 47.29 points, or 4.5%, to finish at 1,002.44. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets and handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello there, Alana.
Okay, Daniel, what's our starting point today?
The number of hand, foot and mouth disease, or HFMD cases, is rapidly increasing here in South Korea, especially among children under the age of six.
Okay, put this in context for us. How serious is the situation according to the latest government data?
So according to the data released by the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency on Friday, the rate of suspected HFMD cases for week 22 of this year stood at 4.3 per 1,000 outpatient visits, recording three straight weeks of increasing figures. Looking at cases involving children aged 6 or younger, the rate spikes to 5.9 per 1,000 outpatients, nearly a twofold on-week hike. A past year's pattern show HFMD normally begin to spread in May and persists through June and September, so the number of cases this year is expected to rise.
Certainly some concerning figures. Can you tell us more about this viral illness?
Sure thing. It's a contagious viral illness primarily caused by enterovirus. Symptoms include rashes on the hands, feet, and inside the mouth, along with fever, fatigue, loss of appetite, diarrhea, and vomiting. It can be transmitted through many ways, namely direct contact with secretions like saliva, nasal discharge, and fluid from blisters or feces, as well as by touching contaminated items.
And so what kind of guidelines or advice did authorities have for parents to prevent the spread of the disease?
The KDCA urged families in childcare facilities to maintain strict hygiene practices. They're also advising people to refrain from visiting multi-use facilities, such as daycare centers and community centers, to the best of their ability. Especially if the children are showing symptoms. Items used by patients, including bedding, clothing, and toys, should be laundered separately and disinfected. While most patients recover naturally within 7 to 10 days after infection, early response is, of course, crucial, as in rare cases, the illness can lead to serious complications, such as meningitis or encephalitis. Children showing suspicious symptoms, such as blisters on their hands, feet, or inside the mouth, should see a doctor immediately.
So good hygiene and early detection seem to be the key there. Let's move on now to our next story.
Over in Seoul's Cheonggye Stream, many visitors shared their surprising encounter or sighting of a large black figure gliding underwater.
Well, I've seen this very interesting video of this large black figure myself. What have people been saying online?
Well, videos of the man in black skin suit and snorkeling gear have been popping up and have been spreading on social media in recent days. One tourist posted a clip last week asking what the man is up to, and the comments varied from guessing that it's just someone indulging in an unusual hobby all the way to cleaning the stream or carrying out some type of ecological survey.
Okay, so Daniel, tell us the answer. Have we finally heard straight from this mysterious swimmer himself?
Yes, local media outlets got to reach out for interviews with the man on Thursday. It's revealed he is Kim Dong-sik, an underwater cinematographer who has a PhD in fisheries science and spent more than four decades filming underwater environments and documenting aquatic life. He is best known for The Whale and I, which explores the lives of whales and their relationship with humanity, which earned him Best Artistic Director at the 60th Paeksang Arts Award. The reason why he has been swimming in the shallow waters, to document the stream's ecosystem.
So one of those online commenters was exactly right about what he was doing. And Daniel, do we know more about this current project he's conducting in Chungye Stream?
Well, Kim said Chungye Stream is a globally recognized example of successful urban ecological restoration and that the stream supports several fish species typically found in clean freshwater habitats, including Korean shiners, sweetfish, and pale chubs. The project is part of his efforts to better preserve the stream for future generations so that they can experience the same ecosystem and find comfort in it just the way we do today.
Well, it's nice to know there's a meaningful purpose behind those unusual sightings. Let's now turn to our final story of the day.
UNESCO World Natural Heritage is expected to add 4 more tidal flats or mud flats in South Korea to its list.
Well, tell us a bit more about the areas that received these recommendations.
According to relevant authorities earlier this week, the International Union for Conservation of Nature, which advises the UNESCO World Heritage Committee, has recommended the addition of Kaedpul Korean Tidal Flats Phase 2, or 4 tidal flats in total, spanning Seosan South Chungcheong Province and Kuhung, Muan, and Yeosu South Jeolla Province. So expanding the existing area of Kaedpul Korean Tidal Flats, which was included back in 2021.
So when will we know for sure if these mud flats are going to garner the recognition? And of course, is there any chance that the recommendation might not be approved?
First of all, the recommendation will be deliberated in July in Busan at the 48th session of the UNESCO World Heritage Committee. There seems to be very slim chances of a disapproval, mainly thanks to its inscription recommendation status by the IUCN.
Okay, good to know. And do we know which other Korean sites could be next in line to earn UNESCO World Heritage status?
So reportedly, there are plans to seek an inscription recommendation next year for capital fortification of Hanyang, a Joseon-era wall system in Seoul. It will be a great addition to Korea's current 17 UNESCO World Heritage sites, with the latest to be included being the petroglyphs at Pangu Stream, which was added last year.
And that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thank you so much, Daniel, for bringing us all the stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
How do I know you didn't abandon him to save your own skin?
No one feels as lost more than I.
Well, the next time I have a good one, we should just continue to continue.
It's time now for Movie Spotlight, your weekly ticket to the world of film, from the hottest blockbusters to hidden indie gems and everything in between. And joining us today in the studio are our resident movie critics, Jason Betrovace. Welcome, Jason.
Hello, Alana.
And Darcy Fiquette. Hello, Darcy.
Hi, Alana.
Darcy, we're starting with you this week. You are recommending a new Korean comedy that draws its inspiration from the roots of present-day K-pop, Wild Sing. It's about a dance group from the early 2000s who are asked to reunite for a special concert more than 2 decades after breaking up. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I mean, I've been looking forward to this film. It's by a director who kind of specializes in the comedy genre and whose filmography includes some works that I really admire. So the director's name is Son Jae-gon, and his first mainstream release was called My Scary Girl, or Talkon Salbaran Yanin, from 2006. And it kind of came out of nowhere and became a big hit just because it was so funny and interesting. And since then, he's released 2 other features, Villain and Widow, or Iching Akdang, and Secret Zoo, which is Hechichiana. Both of those were really kind of unusual and clever, and which I really enjoyed. And so this new movie, Wild Sing, it's the same title in Korean and English. It stars Kang Dong-wan, Park Ji-hyun, and Om Tae-gu as 3 members of this dance group. And, you know, the actors kind of really throw themselves into it. They're, you know, they give everything they have to these hip-hop moves and the rapping and the dance routines. There are also some really amusing appearances by Oh Jung-se and Shin Ha-kyun.
Well, it sounds like the movie had a lot to live up to if you've enjoyed the other director's work so much. Before I ask and get into, you know, did it live up to the hype, tell us more about the plot. Was there, what, you know, what was the major conflict, I suppose?
Yeah, so the story opens in 2001. There's a music producer who kind of brings these 3, you know, musicians, performers together, and then he names this group Triangle. And at first, it doesn't seem like these personalities are going to be a good match. They don't seem to really get along that well. But then their debut appearance is this huge success, and soon they're on top of the music world. They have a huge number of fans. They're kind of arousing the jealousy of these other singers around them. But their position ends up being fairly precarious. you know, after the release of their second album, this plagiarism scandal breaks out. Their manager flees the country with all of their money. And then, so basically the group kind of disintegrates at this point, and we flash forward 20 years into the present. The lead vocalist, his only job is as a radio presenter, sort of like us, and he loses his job. The rapper is this insurance salesman who's this highly, you know, he's deeply in debt. And then the female member of the group has married into this super rich family. Mm-hmm. They're invited to perform on this live broadcast, which, you know, supports this expo bid by Gangwon Province. But getting the group together, back together, is hard. That's kind of the initial conflict, just the fact that, you know, everybody kind of hates each other at this point, mm-hmm. and they haven't spoken to each other in many years, and they're all in different positions. But so getting the group back together and then driving out to the venue in Gangwon Province turns out to be kind of an even bigger challenge, mm-hmm. because of things that happen along the way.
It really does sound like art mirroring reality, because a lot of the time in, you know, the K-pop world, we hear about these scandals to do with plagiarism and management going off the walls. But Darcy, you said this is a comedy. So, you know, is it more slapstick? Is it tongue-in-cheek, or is it a black comedy?
I don't know. It's kind of in the middle. I mean, it's not really making fun of K-pop, but I think that they do have a lot of fun kind of recreating these dance numbers and this exaggeratedly sincere kind of way. So it's kind of walking the line between homage and satire. Mm-hmm. The personalities in the film are all quite over the top. And so a lot of the comedy comes from the way that these characters clash with each other. And then there's physical comedy as well, although not so much that you'd call it slapstick. As comedy, I think it has a lot of these different elements that kind of work together. And that was true of the director's other films as well. But he does kind of have his own style in mm-hmm. that sense.
Well, million-dollar question, did you like it?
I did really like it. It's, I was watching it on a weekday afternoon, which is usually a time when there aren't many people in the theater. Mm-hmm. There was a fairly big group of people in that screening. And the music was fun, the performances were fun. All throughout the film, it keeps your interest. There's a moment kind of two-thirds in the film where they're really stuck, and it does kind of, you know, you feel stuck as well, and you're like, oh, come on, let's get moving, let's get the thing going. But in doing that, he allows for, a bit more of a dramatic ending to it, I think. And, you know, it's the kind of film that when you finish it, like, I would really enjoy going back to watch it again, I think. I have a feeling I'd like it even more the second time. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, certain films are like that. If you have really interesting characters and you have an interesting setting and, you know, it's not always kind of laugh out loud funny, but it's always kind of simmering just below the surface. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, I thought it came out quite well.
So nice you'd see it twice. That's a pretty good review. Jason, did you see it?
I did, and it's great. I mean, it's not without its faults. It is. In places it does. The humor is so interesting. I read a comment online saying, coming out of theater, I laughed and I don't even know why. It pays homage to K-pop. It's also kind of satire in a way. And yet it also is not, it's not offending, mm-hmm. you know, K-pop. But the performances are completely over the top. And it does feel a bit all over the place at times. But that also is why it kind of works. Mm. And the performers just put everything into it. Like, literally, they throw everything at it. And it's infectious, actually. You come out just wanting to dance down, you know, the hallway. And I got in my car and I just laughed. And, I love this director. I mean, he's made some great... I remember watching My Scary Girl in London years ago, 20 years ago, and I just loved his sense of humour. It's so unique. Because in Korea, humour is usually slapstick. Lee Byung-hun, whose production company, I think... this is the director who made Extreme Job. He's quite renowned for his kind of more dry humour. And here this kind of sits somewhere in between, I suppose. And it just, I mean, Yeah, I just loved it. Mm. I teach K-pop to my students in the industry, and first generation groups, H.O.T. and clearly it's kind of paying homage to these groups with the use of colours. They're kind of the dancing around and just everything, right? The staging of it all, and it's just so committed. The performances are so committed, and I just had a lot of fun watching it, and I think audiences will come back for seconds, including myself. I'm going to go back and watch it. And some of the Oh Jung-sae is just... Oh Jung-sae and Shin-ah-kyun, he's just one of the most theatrical actors in the industry. I suppose he's kind of like Johnny Depp of Korea or something, but he is just so funny. Both of them are scene stealers, and yet they all make an impact. And also I feel like the industry is kind of coming full circle, going back to where it began. This is about K-pop, not film, but it does feel to me that the industry has gone back to the drawing board and tried to work out, what audiences want. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting. It goes back to the 1990s and we'll talk about horror in a second, but yeah, these kind of mid-sized budget films and people are falling in love with them. And I just really hope this film takes off. I really do.
Well, 4 thumbs up from our 2 critics, yeah. So sounds like a great review. We are going to move on to that horror film, Jason, that you just mentioned. Your pick this week is the Hollywood film Back Rooms, featuring British actor Chiwetel Ejiofor, that has been a box office hit in the US. What can you tell us?
Yeah, this movie's been a big hit. It's crossed $100 million. There's also another movie that's done quite well, which I'll talk about in a second. It's based on the YouTube series of the same name by director Kane Parsons. He is just 20 years of age. I mean, how is this possible that he makes a movie?
My son is 20 years old.
I know. Maybe talk a bit about him in a second.
I like to pretend I'm 20 years old.
But yeah, basically the film is set in his furniture store in the States. It's on the verge of bankruptcy. The owner is played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, the British actor, and he's really struggling. He's an alcoholic. He sleeps in the store at night because he's got nowhere to go. It's basically corporate America is great for these big companies. What about these small business operators in what is a very corporate America? And he begins to know something's off with the lights. They kind of flicker on and off, and he gets a technician to come and have a look, and they find down in the basement these switches. They don't know what they're there for. They're kind of at an angle, and they're just out of place. And so this strange phenomena kind of continues, and he's like lying there one night and the lights are going off again. So he goes downstairs to the basement. He shouldn't go downstairs to the basement, but he does. And then he finds that he can walk through this wall.
Never walk through a magic portal. Yeah.
Never go down to the basement.
Yeah. So then there are these kind of back rooms. So hence the title. It's all yellow. And it actually begins this kind of found footage horror, which is set in these back rooms. But I thought, maybe he can't get back out. But he can get back out. And so he gets his stuff. Again, not a good idea. Kat and Bobby. And he basically, they film him, film his commercials. So he goes, guys, can you film me going through this wall and come along with me for the ride? Not a good idea. And then strange things happen, obviously. And then also connected to the narrative is the protagonist therapist, who's kind of hard to explain, because if I do, it's giving I'm explaining too much about the film's plot. Now, it's co-produced by James Wan's company. This is the guy behind the Saw films. His company Atomic Monster. There's also Sean Levy's involved through his company 21 Laps Entertainment and A24 distributed film. If you look at the number of producers, there's a lot. Mm-hmm. Now that might explain, maybe they were quite concerned that we have a 20-year-old director at the helm. So mm-hmm. they have a lot of producers involved to keep the investors happy.
Let's talk a bit more about that director. I mean, 20 years old, when I think back to what I was doing at 20, is it even possible to make a breakout hit, this young?
It is unusual. I mean, it's interesting, he's a YouTuber. And this is also true of this other movie, Obsession, as well. That's directed by Curry Baker. Now, he's a YouTuber and he's, I think, just 26. Now, Obsessions cost $150 million. That movie costs $1 million or less to make, right? So that's now become one of the most profitable films, you know, of this year. It's become a breakout hit. Now, young people are, you know, they're fans of these YouTubers and their content. So clearly they've come out to see the film. But it's just, it's, it is more than that. But I think, yeah, I mean, the central to, I haven't seen Obsession, it hasn't been released in Korea, so I can't really comment on that. But, you know, with regards to backrooms, you know, architecture, I mean, architecture is so central to a, you know, well, setting, you know, it's so central to a horror film. You know, often they're set in these interior locations, houses, hospitals, you know,
forests.
But yeah, Korean films that often, you know, definitely more on the, you know, tend to be set in these interior locations. And yeah, these psychological horror films, this idea of what's real, what's not real, is it in the mind of the protagonist? And that's kind of what plays out in this film, because it plays around with trauma, memories. And again, I can't really delve into the film too much.
No spoilers.
Because otherwise I'll just give too much away. But it does feel like, although the director has come out and said that, because some have said, was this all a dream? And he said, yeah, no, it's not. So... but yeah, it's an interesting movie, and I'm really good. What I like about it is young people are going back to the theatre, kind of making the connection to what I was talking about earlier, you know, in the 1990s. Again, in America, you know, you have the teenage kind of slasher films, right? These college, high school slasher films. Scream, What Did You Do Last Summer, and others as well. And so I feel like, I mean, there was a danger, or at least there was a concern that, you know, the small screen is going to destroy the viewing experience on the big screen. No one's going to come back to the theatre. But I think what's actually happening, ironically, is that the small screen is actually getting young people to come back to the big screen. And maybe that's not what people would, you know, thought would happen. And so, and it does tend to be certain genres that are, you know, striking a chord with young people, horror films in particular. There's also animations as well. In Korea, it's melodramas on top of that. But encouraging, I would say. And this film is well put together. Some have suggested, that, as I was listening to a podcast, that perhaps it's been ghost-directed. You know, James Wan, he made the Saw films. But he broke out in his 20s as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was ghost-directed at all. I mean, I'm sure there was advice given. He's 20 years old. You know, I'm sure he's listening to these, you know, reputable directors and producers. But at the same time, I just can't see them just, you know, stepping in and directing. That's not what happened. He's clearly very talented, you know. It is well put together. It's well... But clearly there are going to be sequels. You know, it feels like there are more questions at the end of the movie. But that's the whole point, right? Because, and I think there's been some criticisms, at least some criticism I've heard people from students from watching the film. Yeah, there are things that, at the end of the movie that didn't quite come together. And I thought, well, that's the whole point. They're going to make a second film, a third movie. If you're producing the film, that's exactly what you want. And given how successful this has become, it's definitely, we are going to see sequels for sure.
Before we wrap up, Darcy, I want to ask, did you get a chance to see it?
I did see it. I mean, I was impressed by the look of the film. It's quite a unique setup, you know, the setting, very memorable. I was a little disappointed by the ending in the sense that, you know, I was kind of, as I was watching the film, I was thinking it was some puzzle that would all kind of at least partly fit together.
It doesn't do that.
It's more like smoke and mirrors where at the end you're like, oh, okay. And then, you know, after watching the film, I pulled up my phone and I'm like, explain backgrounds. And then basically the information that comes out is like, well, you have to watch the series that, you know, the director made before making this film.
Okay.
And so it is kind of connected. I think that people who are familiar with the series will be a lot more oriented when they're watching the film. I'm curious to go back and kind of look at the series now on YouTube, but... And, you know, maybe they'll move forward again into sequels. But, you know, in general, it was really well made. I was engaged throughout it. And then at the end, I was like, I felt a little kind of pulled this way and that.
Maybe another one that you'll have to go and see again.
But again, 20-year-old filmmaker. you know, impressive.
Yeah. Well, that wraps up this week's Movie Spotlight. Big thanks, as always, to our movie critics. Thanks so much, Jason.
Thank you.
And thanks, Darcy.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for today's edition of Korea 24. On a personal note, today is my last day with the programme as I move on to my next chapter. Thank you so much to our listeners for tuning in and to all the contributors, guests and colleagues who've helped make this show what it is. I wish Korea 24 every success going forward. I've been your host, Alana Hill. Thank you for joining us. Take care and goodbye.